SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Travers weekend Friday, race fans. New York Showcase Day back at Saratoga. We're coming to you from Vegas. And day one of the NHC later this afternoon. Yesterday, after we wrapped up at noon, really a nice day of racing. And a really intriguing contest. 14 races, 11 had to be played, and it made for, as we kind of speculated, a compact leaderboard, and a lot of familiar names that succeeded. 19 players worked their way in for seats starting today, and the winner, Joe Costello, not only was he already double qualified for today and tomorrow and into Sunday. But he's double qualified for 2022 already. He's already gotten those two seats knocked out. So he was playing for tour points and for cash. And that worked out okay. $32,025 to Joe Costello. David Wolf got a spot for January of next year by finishing second, but he also picked up $21,000. And Keith Nodskov, who made a kind of a middle move and grabbed a nice rung on the leaderboard at the top and then, you know, played well to the wire. He wins $10,675. And he did utilize a spot for today. Other winners of seats into today: Mark Wilgard, Mark Bertucci, Danny Chavez, Vaugh Bear, Mike McAvoy, Mike Foster, Randy De La Gardelle, Kerry Besor, Mark Wodlowski, who was an early leader, Wendy Long, Albion Benton, he was with us, was that last year or 2 years ago? I'm going to forget the name he goes by more more commonly. Joe Rumfalo, Chris Podratz, Rock Edwards, Darren Yarwood, Robert Dawson, David Souter, and Greg Calawag. And also Tom Blosser and Sarah Weiner, but they both used their win for 2022. So a lot of players utilizing the last chance, next chance, and in fact, because of qualifications that were already in place, quite a number of beneficiaries. Because Darren Yarwood would have been, had everybody utilized a seat for this year, he would have been the cutoff. And instead, Robert Dawson, David Souter, and Greg Galawag, they might not have known immediately that they were going to get in, but they did. So we're going to try to, we'll probably talk to Joe Costello during the NHC show later today. Excuse me. This is going to be, I don't know what advisory I can give you on the voice. It's the craziest thing. It actually was worse yesterday after we got off the air, so I guess I can't complain. And we'll just do the best we can. John, Clocker John, helping with Travis Stone method. lots of honey and lemon and tea. I banged out half a dozen of them yesterday. So as soon as I got some coffee here, but as soon as the hot tea service comes, I may step away here and there for some tea service. What was fun about yesterday was the prices, because you know, with only 14 races, you thought, how volatile could the scenario be? But particularly right at the end, and with the Del Mar races, there was a 14-1 shot, Platinum Equity, in the third race at Del Mar. And how about for those of you that follow Tom Quigley, Quigley's Corner? Quigley from the paddock at Del Mar sends out a missive. Here's a horse, a 6-year-old gelding that's won a bunch of times, and he looks best in the paddock in this 16 claimer. Goes off as the longest shot on the board, wins like a champ. So Quigley, not just useful to you at Santa Anita, helping out at Del Mar too. Unbelievable. Steve Knapp for this one with Edwin Maldonado. And even in the nightcap at Del Mar, you had a 9-2 shot, or make that an 11-2 shot, Peter Miller for Peter Redekop. And you know, those two last races, and that third race at Del Mar was a mandatory. So that and I'm sure the leaderboard, the new leaderboard, I put up the link on Twitter. All you have to do, for those of you not on Twitter and you want to follow along today, tomorrow, Sunday, NTRA.com. It's on the front page. There's no, you don't have to backslash anything or go looking, leaderboard, etc., etc. Just NTRA.com. Scroll down a little bit. The new leaderboard is really cool. It not only gives you real time, literally as soon as races go official, you'll see the standings. You'll see the leaderboard, and you'll see a change. There's even arrows up and down showing, you know, what direction various players are going. And the other fun aspect is it records the mandatories, which are easy to follow, but it gives you the optionals, the electives. And so you see what players are holding bullets. Really a nice enhancement. And the leaderboard shows the top eight, and then another 12, give or take. I got it right here. And then that second, the major leaderboard, the top leaders, it's static. And then there's a scroll to the right, and it goes through all the leaderboard. You know what? I didn't notice if there was, in fact, a search bar. And that's a great question, because the old-style leaderboard used to have a search bar. So you could put in, this is interesting. So right now, the NTRA's has kind of reverted to the old-fashioned, the one that you are used to. But I'm sure that when we go live later, you'll be able to, see the same thing you saw yesterday, which was really good and really an easy way to track everything. All right, so there's just a little contest. We got 3 days of contest conversation that'll keep us busy. couple of other notes from yesterday, particularly at Saratoga. It included a couple of prices right away there as well. In fact, that 11-1 winner, Moam, the twirling candy. And how funny was that? John Nichols and I, it wasn't 40 minutes later after we talked about Horacio De Paz. Boom. Moam comes rallying up the inside under Jose Ortiz. And so that got the room right away. First race of the day, got the room rocking with a $24 winner. Then came a $20 winner in that Clear Vision in the claiming second. This was the Tony Dutrow that rallied up the inside, I think. Chad had another three wins yesterday to go with the five. with the five on Wednesday. So he's, I think it's fair to say, you know, overtaken and potentially pulling away from Mike Baker. And Todd, there was that orchestration of his for Seth Klarman, Flatter Colt, bred by Macmer Hall, who Rat Ortiz rode very confidently, and Pletcher for the lows with Keep Calm, Carry On, the two-year-old as well at 3-2. Maker did jump back up and grab a win while Chad was rallying, and I think Chad might have thought that he was going to get even another one with life on top, and High Tide came flying for Maker and Gaffleone and Max's Stable to snatch that one. And Union Maiden that I brought up yesterday in that interesting eighth allowance was a winner. Nice comeback race last seen November. And Chad and Peter Brandt's Rastafara goes favored in the risk averse and wins there. And there was a funny nightcap winner at Saratoga yesterday. When you look down on a chart and you see that Joel Rosario rode a winner for David and Holly Wilson on a horse for Vladimir Sarin, where would you think you were? That's totally California. Of course, the Wilsons have been with Sarin for years and years. And I texted Ron Anderson to ask. I said, you know, I went looking at some Wilson winners at Del Mar the last 15 years. And I couldn't find where Joel had ever won for them at Del Mar. I thought that would be a cool parallel. But he really didn't ride for Sarin out west. Jose Cuevas is handling the horses for Sarin in New York. And, of course, long associated with Bobby Frankel. And so Ron said, that Rosario's been getting on horses for the Sarin barn because of the tight relationship with Jose. So that explained it. But it was such a California set of connections that made me smile. Hope to make everybody smile as we get ready for the weekend. And when you go play some bets, and Dave Grenick is going to join us first as we talk Travers, of course, and everything that comes with it. The showcase day today, which is a nice card. And we'll see if Dave's got anything he wants to slip in about that. James Scully. Scully always comes for Travers, and he is in Saratoga. So we'll get a set of opinions from James. Hammer is on his way, is getting on his way. Not sure if he's in the car yet, 6:15, if he's on his way yet to Kentucky Downs, but he'll be in the car soon enough. So we'll check in with Hammer. And speaking of contests, I know he'll want to promote the big Kentucky Downs Turf Championship that they're doing again this year. The National Turf Handicapping Champion. Three contests, so 6 days, 13 NHC seats, 3 BCBCs, and 100,000. And an additional $25,000 for the biggest combined six-day bankroll, so incentive to play in all six cards and also all three contests. Jay Pribman at top of hour two, and I haven't heard from Ed, but I imagine Ed will turn up. You're gonna get, I think, a pretty special Travers preview. At about 11, because I'm going to turn it over when Nick Tamaro comes down. And when Nick turns up, we'll put him on with Andy. Excuse me, Andy Serling, who's doing plenty of work. He's isolated for a week on COVID protocol, and But I said to him yesterday, I said, you up for a, you know, for a handicapping session? He said, do you want me to do the whole show? I think he's climbing the walls a little bit, and I can understand it. So Andy and Nick Tamaro to do like a stakes talking horses for you in the third hour, and we expect Mike Welch as well. And a robust Travers weekend preview, and it's not just Travers. We want to slip in, you know, but anything else that, as we mentioned, you know, yesterday with that Eric Zimney visit, the Charlestown Classic action tonight to look forward to. And we'll watch for that. And I have got, couple of pieces of news. And in fact, you know what? Speaking of New York, I want to congratulate one thing while we wait for Dave Grenig. They announced yesterday the finalists in the Thoroughbred Employee Awards. And I won't go through the finalists now, but I will congratulate Nick Karras, who all of you have come to Saratoga, you've seen working tirelessly every waking hour. Nick Karras for the chaplaincy and the backstretch team. And Nick was named the Thoroughbred Industry Community Award winner. And you couldn't, I mean, there are Nick Karras's on every backstretch. But for those of us that know Nick and have ever, you know, done anything with him, you know how deserving he is of this. And we'll get Nick on as they get closer to the presentations in October. But the other six categories have three nominees each. We should also acknowledge that Diana Panonis from the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. She was the runner-up in that singular award, Thoroughbred Industry Community Award. And congratulations to her as well. And since we're talking awards and New York, the Venezia Award, which became a polling, much like the George Wolfe Award, to Sean Parker, another outstanding selection. So, really, it's nice when people, you know, that you know, particularly on the work side, on the backstretch side, when there's acknowledgments, I think that's why everybody so enjoys the and appreciates the, you know, the best turned out awards and the circumstances when the different tracks where, you know, they'll name the groom. There should be more of that, without a doubt. We're just waiting on Dave here a second, and we'll vamp for a second. I think I hear Dave Grenig now, though.
I'm here.
There he is, Big D. David, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you today?
You know, we're going to plow through this, and we got a big contest ahead. Anxious, though, for thoughts on the Travers card and circumstances there, Dave. And on that topic, it feels like there's some increasing concern about, you know, with Andy sidelined and so forth, and others, you know, having to go through COVID quarantines and such. Is there anything to impart on that front?
Not that I'm aware of. I've checked in on all the rumors about no fans next week, and I'm told that that's just a bad rumor. So from that standpoint, no. And as far as anything else regarding it, I don't have much to tell you. But as far as no fans, no, that's not going to happen. We're going to have fans.
I appreciate that. And that was something that specifically had been, you know, kind of murmurs from the rafters. Before we talk Travers, a quick thought about today's showcase card.
I happen to think that this doesn't work up here as well as it works downstate. Maybe it's the divisions, the Albany, the Fleet Indian, they're not really great races. I guess it's somewhat interesting the fact that you have Stafford and Kletcher in the mix there, in the Albany. But I like American Revolution at the short price in the Albany, and I really don't have an opinion on the I don't have an opinion on the Fleet Indian. Shosford Forest looks like the right one, but I'm not sure that it wins again. Maybe Pay Grade should like two turns. I think they started her off around two turns. And, she was third that day. She showed some grit winning the A of the then, going a mile. I guess she has to prove that she wants the mile in an A. But if I would try to beat Shosford Philly in there, a bit of higher shots, I would try Pay Grade. But other than that, I know that this Alacrity is scratching from the Seeking the Ante. Our colleague Matt Hagerty reported that earlier in the week. So that's a 5-horse field, which looks like Velvet Sister and Leo Band's Legacy in there. But I don't know. It's a nice day to have, but I think it works. The ones downstate seem to work better than the ones up here.
No, I get it. And there was one other race that I was curious about. Oh, the Yotto. You got the fillies and mares, and there's a price in here, and the fact that Flavian Pratt's in town, people should be aware of and watch where he lands on a few different horses, including this Kilkia from Mark Hennig, who there's a chance that she's loose on the lead.
That's plausible. But Mike's Girl, I think if you go back to the race two back where she had success on the front end, I know it's a 16 claimer, but she did show some speed there, 23-1, 46-4. She got off really bad in the race up here.
Yep.
The event that she did win, but I think her preferred style, I don't know, I shouldn't say her preferred style. In a race without speed, I would expect Mike's Girl to be close, aggressively handled by Ricardo Santana. So I'm not so sure that someone's getting loose on the lead in another
fight. Well, a classic lady, and My Heart Belongs to Daddy. Chocolate Cookie looks like she's moving in the right direction. I caught Mike's Girl with that win. That was a nice pop first couple of weeks of the meet. And she's always come to town and run well. So Jose Ortiz is elsewhere today in this spot. And ends up on Dancing Kiki for Maker. I thought that was the most fun race in a lot of ways of the day. Although, the funny side, Dave, I thought the funny side was worth a mention as well, right? Because Montebello comes in for Baffert, a wayward New York bred from the West Coast.
Yeah, he's sent four in, and two of them are on their dance card. I tell you who's a bit interested in there is the Charlie Baker horse.
Off a layoff.
Hope. Won the first time out in the mud, going 5.5, with Rosario, and the works are a little spotty since then. Looked like maybe there was an issue that she didn't get to the work cap for another month, but the two works look okay. I like the outside draw. I like the fact that she comes out of a race where somebody else came back and won. I think it is an interesting race. And obviously, Defuski Island was very good first time out. And he is coming back on a bit of short rest. So we'll see how that plays out.
I referenced some jock maneuvers, and when we talk about Saturday's action, there's actually a couple of crazy things, including Jose and Irad swapping mounts in a big spot. But let's touch on the big weeks that Luis Saez and Chad Brown have essentially, you know, seemingly, I'm not saying they've wrapped up titles, but boy, they've spurted away.
Yeah, I think Louis wrapped up the title.
Yeah,
I don't mean to be a jinx or anything, but I mean, you know, he'd have to go. You know, it's sort of like when you look at the baseball standings. He would have to go 2-16 to be a team that's still mathematically alive, and they'd have to go like 15-3. You know, I mean, you'd have to have the Ortiz brothers go on some kind of, you know, 4-a-day, 5-a-day, multiple times, and Saez to get blank. I mean, if Saez won 2. For every 4 or 5 that the other guys won, I still think he still wins. So, and I don't see anything that's going to slow him down. He's here and getting him on the right horses even in the races that you don't expect. Some of the lesser races, he's riding and he's riding the right ones. He's riding as good as he's ever has right now. I don't see anybody making a run at him. If the weather stays good and Chad can get his horses on the turf, I don't see how he's going to get caught. Maker's going to finish with the best speed he's ever had here. He might finish with maybe upwards of 28, 30 to win, 30 wins, which would be stupendous for Mike Maker. It still won't be enough to, you know, in terms of just looking at the title, it won't be enough to catch Chad. He's going to get, you know, upwards of 35 to close to 40. So, to me, you know, I think any drama that these races had is lacking.
Let's talk about Saturday's drama on the racetrack then, and we'll start with the feature and the $1,250,000 Travers, where Essential Quality is, you know, so much the horse to beat, and then Dave, on top of everything else, since the draw, every way you look at this race, it seems like he's going to get the kind of scenario he likes, where he can set up shop behind speed and move at will.
I think he likes every type of scenario except getting bumped really hard coming out of the gate like he did in the Kentucky Derby. I don't think there's a scenario that really works against this horse. He has laid second before and been successful, i.e. Bluegrass, i.e. Breeders' Futurity. I see him sort of getting that, you know, I see Louis kind of just hustling away enough to get position. I think Midnight Bourbon goes to the front. I think he stalks Midnight Bourbon. If there's somebody else who wants to mix it up, I mean, Al Stahl's been saying, for, you know, since he didn't really want to get into the lead last time, but he sort of had felt he had no choice because of where he was positioned. Now he does have the choice of sort of being in that stalking trip. Maybe he hustles out of there with the idea of trying to box Essential Quality in or something like that. I don't know. I try not to get too creative here. I mean, you can, if Essential Quality gets beat, then I guess he gets beat, but I'm not smart enough to figure out which one of these horses that he's beaten all the time is going to finally turn the tables on him. The horse ran really, really well in the Jim Dandy. He's moved forward off that in terms of what I've seen in his work. The only horse that he hasn't beaten yet in this group is Miles D. I think Miles D has the ability to be a really nice horse. I think it might not, it's a little too soon for him, I think, to step out of a second place finish in the Curlin and beat this horse in the Travers.
Any thoughts about how Keep Me in Mind, who followed up his Jim Dandy with, I'm going to talk to Mike Welch later in the show, and I'm anxious for Welch's thoughts. Keep Me in Mind has been sharp coming out of that Jim Dandy, and it feels like he's got a little bit more on the toes feel going into this.
Yeah, but he's faced the horse 5 times, and he hasn't beaten him yet. Why am I supposed to believe this is going to be the time he beats him? I agree that the horse has run really well in his last 2 races, and when he's faced this horse, though, he hasn't beaten him. There's a lot of the second-time Rosario angle. Okay, I don't have any stats on that, but I do think it's probably it might be a good thing. He was keen in the Jim Dandy. The pace is probably slower here. He's probably going to be keen again, which I got to think is going to take a little bit out of his late run. So I don't have any problem with the horse. I think he's a nice horse. I'm just having trouble seeing why the sixth time is going to be the charm.
Ah, well put. Well put. We also don't have to worry in this race. There's nobody coming off Lasix into the Travers. Everybody raced at least last time without. Let's back it up then. So, Dave, I mean, you're just acknowledging the reality of essential quality.
I think I am. Look, I was a big fan. I got off the horse a little too early. I got off him in the Derby. I wasn't on the winner in the Derby, so it didn't matter. But I didn't go back to him in the Belmont, and I went with Hot Rod Charlie. It was a really good race. He beat a very good horse in Hot Rod Charlie, and Hot Rod Charlie came back and ran a winning race. He really won the Haskell, but he didn't because of what happened in the stretch there. But the horse that he beat in the Belmont came back and ran another cracker in the Haskell. Take essential quality out, put Hot Rod Charlie in. Who are you picking? I think most people are going to pick Hot Rod Charlie. I don't have a way to beat essential quality this time. I hate to take the favor, but that's where I'm at.
Let's talk about the Sword Dancer, the mile and a half standard, and I thought it was a little amusing that with all the headlines and everybody talking about whether it was field size and stakes and everything else, it seems like nobody even noticed that Japan was coming to town.
Right. I wasn't doing this race, so I didn't do much work with the Aiden O'Brien's crew over there, which I normally go see, but look, bring in a European horse to face American horses. I'm going Euro most of the time, and I don't, this horse, we just won a Group 3, only had a mile and an eighth, but the horse has run, he won a Group 3 earlier in the year at a mile and 5/16, and he's running against some really talented horses. He's Group 1 placed. He carried 140 pounds in his last start. I just noticed that. He's dropping 20 pounds.
Yeah.
I wish I could drop 20 pounds. I like Japan. I just don't. I don't. I'm a Gufo fan because Gufo shows up and runs his race every time. I'd love to see Gufo, win this race because I think he's a pretty cool horse. And like I said, any horse that shows up every single time and runs his race. I think his biggest defeat was a whopping 4 lengths. I have a lot of faith in Gufo. Cross Borders, a cool New York bred who loves Saratoga. But I think they're meeting I think they might be meeting a different kettle of fish in Japan.
Well, we've also got Mike Maker with Cross Border, who's 6-7 with a second place finish in Saratoga. I thought that Moretti was an interesting addition to the field by Todd. Channel Maker, who dances every dance, of course, as well. Last year's Sword Dancer winner and Rock Emperor for Chad, consistent check earner, and Tribune for Chad. So not a headlining type addition of the Sword Dancer, but a group that's enhanced by Japan's presence. Let's talk now about the personal ensign, which the problem with these giant days, Dave, more and more is that we don't get to really focus thoroughly enough on a race like this, where everybody, is excited about a headline matchup between Letruska and Swiss Skydiver, but there's so much more going on in here.
There is, and let's address something you brought up earlier with the jockey kind of switching stuff. So
yes.
All right, so with Jose Ortiz was named to ride Swiss Skydiver, let's go back to the 5th, right? Back in Belmonte. Irad gets hurt a couple days before the race. Jose was committed to ride, was named on Swiss Skydiver. Swiss Skydiver gets sick, temperature comes out of the race. Naturally logical position there for Jose to pick up the mount when Irad went down. In Churchill, that was the day of the Mother Goose. I believe Irad was committed to Always Selena, and obviously Jose was going to be there to ride next year. So, now it goes, so he rode Letruska there, but I think he's got to go back to Swiss Skydiver because that's who he was committed to ride, in a couple of different spots. And I think when they rode him, when they ran Swiss Skydiver in the Whitney, I think it was told to them, okay, we're going to Whitney personal ensign. So they gave him a commitment for the Whitney personal ensign. Irad was just getting back on the filly that he won the Apple Blossom on, and I think that's all that there is to it. I don't think it's them choosing so much as it's just that's what sort of went down in their last couple starts.
Talk about some of the other considerations beyond Swiss Skydiver and Latruska before I pin you down for a selection.
A couple of interesting horses here that are going to have their last starts aren't very good. One is As Time Goes By. Stafford kind of shipped that one here along with Gamine and the two New York brands, kind of sneaked him on the plane, and you're wondering, okay, well, what's that about? Well, he didn't get off very well in the Clement Hirsch. And when she doesn't get off very well, she's not as effective as when she's into the race, like she was in the Santa Maria and Santa Margarita. I find it kind of interesting that he opted to, give her another try and send her here. A lot of his horses do run well on the East Coast track. So I think you get him, maybe Del Mar didn't fit her. She slipped coming out of the gate. She had the rail. Kind of, if you throw that race out, she's won four of her last five, but the second Skydiver that holds a mile, she's a bit interesting, and I think she might squeeze away a little bit of a price. The other horse that I think interesting is Bonnie South. Bonnie South comes off a bad race in the Delaware Handicap. It's not like Brad Cox to just draw a line through a performance like that and point to a grade one. But he's doing it here. He says, you just think things, we're not a good setup for her in the Delaware Handicap. She's trained really well here. She's been training with her last two works. Have been with the Central Quality. She's worked right with them. And if you go back, she was she won the Double Dog there against Royal Flag and Grace the Princess, horses that are in here. And then she was second to Latruska in the fifth. I'm not saying either of those two horses are going to win the race, but I think they can be in the number at better odds than they have been in their careers.
Quick thoughts about emergent Graceful Princess off the Molly Pitcher win and Harvey's Little Goyle returning to the dirt.
Yeah, the Molly, Graceful Princess, the fact that she was 14-1 in that field was a little concerning, I guess, so maybe her form wasn't great, but I don't know that field was, that field isn't this year. And who's getting Harvey? I think Bill's trying to shake things up a little bit here, and she has some form here. Another reason why Bonnie South is interesting to me is because of the fact she was second in the Alabama to Swiss Skydiver last year, and Harvey's Little Goyle was third. So she has a good race, a decent race on the track, on the dirt. He gets Diaz, who you can't go wrong there. But I think he's reaching a little bit. The last work was really good. It came in a mad rush of that very busy Saturday morning. But there were a couple of works that were before that were a little concerning to me. I saw a couple of her works before that big 59-3 work, and I wasn't ready to rave about it.
Hmm. By the way,
one other thing, she's probably eligible for the same races that Warlike Goddess is going to be going for. So if you're Mott, you're like, do I really want to run the Harvey's Little Goyle against Warlike Goddess? And that's just me handicapping that. I'm not saying that, you can't, trainers run horses, multiple horses in the same race all the time, but maybe he's thinking, let me try something different. And here's the other thing, too. He said to me once before, he doesn't like the mile and 3/8 for this filly in the Breeders' Cup, so if she at all has a chance to run in a Breeders' Cup race, it would be the Distaff. Why not find out now if she's even worth it?
Smart.
Like that.
And, very smart.
And this is the race here that
absolutely
would make you determine.
Absolutely. I mean, run out of your own stall. Dave, you've planted a seed in my head. You've created a new term for the busy portions of workouts in the morning when you alluded to a mad Russian. So from now on, it's the Al Herbosky. The Al Herbosky portion of the morning.
Well, I meant to say Mad Rush. If I said Mad Russian, then I apologize. I might have had one last night, but I didn't. But
Krennic,
I meant to say Mad Rush.
Krennic will be around through Labor Day, everybody. Tip your servers.
You're always, please tip your waiters and waitresses.
talk about the Jerkins, and this is really fun. And this is one of those races where I very frequently say we didn't need a bunch of chattel and chazarai to fill out this field. We've got six, and we've got major principles that might throw down.
It's really a fun race. I mean, there's nobody, win or lose, Jackie's Warrior is the best three-year-old in a one-turn setting. I guess we find out a little bit more about if Life is Good is can be contender for the best three-year-old, period, because his races obviously in California earlier in the year, and his maiden win last November were terrific. It's a tall task to come back against a horse like Jackie's Warrior. Off of what, almost six month layoff, but that's how highly they think of this horse. I don't think, no disrespect to Parks, I don't think they were really thinking that the Smarty Jones was a race they wanted to bring the horse back in. If they're going to run at Parks, it would be in the Pennsylvania Derby, which, couldn't that be an interesting storyline, Life is Good versus Medina Spirit in the Pennsylvania Derby? Let's go down there for some cheesesteaks and some drama there. Life is Good is fun to watch in the morning. He's a brilliant workhorse. I think the fact that he got post six to the outside, I think it's going to help him his chances. If Jackie's Warrior can't handle the heat that he's probably going to get from the likes of Drain the Clock and maybe Newbomb, then Life is Good has every chance to be.
The horse to me that jumped off the page when I kind of sat down and looked at pace scenarios and running styles and whatnot, and this is a race that one of the first things you look for are turnbacks. Doesn't Following C get a ideal scenario in here, Dave?
Not if he gets mixed up in with Jackie's Warrior and Drain the Clock. I don't know if that would be ideal. If he can sit a little bit, I hear what you're saying about the turn back. If he can sit a little bit off of them, he may get that set up. I like the horse. I don't know that what he's beat in those two races is, it's not like what he's going to be running against here, but I don't totally disagree with him. But I just wonder, I just hope, for his sake, that he doesn't get mixed up there with those two.
And what can you tell us about the state bred in here, the judge and jury, the Gargan, who I didn't realize ran as big as he did earlier in the meet? And when I went back and looked at that race, my eyes popped out. It's as fast almost as anything in here other than anybody named Jackie's Warrior.
It was a very fast race. It was a very impressive race off the layoff. I mean, just in general handicapping, when they run that big off the layoff, you have to expect the bounce. And it's not like he's running in a New York race two other than, or even a two other than, like a Sunday against Bo Liam, like he could have went in. He's running in a grade one. I get it. Short field, Saez, take him back, make a run, see who you can pass. It's one of those you'll be they'll be watching. Oh, he's fifth, he's fourth, he's third. If he shows up with that race again, it could be real fun. And if he gets third in a grade one, that's a home run too. So I get why they're in here. I think it's a tall task against Jackie's Warrior, Life is Good, and even Following.
The middle of the card features the 3 7/8 standard grade ones back to back to back. It's a figure maker's dream. It's a gift to Andy Beyer. Ballerina, Forgo, and Jerkins. The Forgo and Ballerina for the veteran, the fillies and mares. It seems like Gamine has got that group over a barrel. But talk about the Forgo, Dave, which is really kind of fun. You got some hard hitters. You got a horse like, I guess, Yaupin. It was made the favorite, and I understand why, but you got plenty of horses that I think have to be seriously considered.
You also have a horse that might be trying to do something that, and you have a lot of intelligent and historical listeners in here, something that I don't know that's ever been done before, is win three grade ones in three different years at Saratoga. Mind Control won the Hopeful at two. He won the Jerkins at three. And now he's a chance to win the four and go at five.
The
only horse
that
I could find that ever won three grade ones at Saratoga is Ginger Punch, who won the two of them in 08, go for one first Lenten, and the go for one in 07. And I think there's something to be said for that. This horse, he doesn't even get respect from the speed figure makers. This horse has never, he's run 21 times, he's won 8, he's won a million two, and he's never a triple-digit buyer. I thought for sure he was going to get a triple-digit buyer in the neighborhood when he beat Perrin's Fires in a really ding-dong battle. They went at each other from the time the gates opened to the time they hit the wire. It was a really fun race. And that was and I know he likes to be involved. That's my only concern. That's my one concern about him here is that if he gets involved in the spot too soon, I would have loved to see him get a little further outside post than the four. But I think he's an interesting horse, just for his love at Saratoga and to me, second time Fletcher and maybe even an improved record. Yalpine, yeah, I mean, look, this horse, when Natoli got hurt last year, he wound up going off the favorite in the Breeders' Cup sprint. So you gotta give him a lot of respect for that. Fun race.
How about Ballerina?
I have a bad feeling. This isn't based on any like real handicapping thing. I don't know. Here's my thing with Gamine. She's had one real race this year. The other, she's run three times. She's won all three of them, obviously, but two of them were paid exhibitions. And she had the one real race where she was her toughest race. Now she ran, she has the stakes record, shares the stakes record, coincidentally with Lady Tag, who's got a daughter of hers in this race in casual. And she's got the rail, she's the high weight. I don't have confidence that she's going to get beat, but I could see her getting beat. And the horse, if I was going to try and beat her with, would be the outside horse from Mike McCarthy speaking.
I would also seriously consider casual as a potential.
I think she's going to run a big race. She's going to run a big race. I don't know if she wins, but I think she's going to run a big race.
Yeah, I completely, completely agree. The only other stake, of course, is the Ballston Spa, where Chad's got half the field.
Yeah, pick a Chad, any Chad, one of them will win.
Dave, it's a nice Travers day. What kind of crowd are they anticipating?
Oh, I don't know. I'd say 38 to 42,000, somewhere along there.
Nice. Well, looking forward to following it here in Vegas. And once we get through this and get back home, we'll start to look toward Labor Day and winding down what's really been a banner meet. I don't know any other way to, there's going to be, the numbers, even despite the weather and the off the turf situations. It's going to be a big, it's been a big success.
It always is here. It always is. And I think they'll, it'll be a record handle to meet, and if the weather can hold off, that would be terrific too for the next 10 days. I think we look good through the weekend, so hopefully the final week will be good as well.
Dave Grenig, everybody, DRF Grenig, and Dave and Mike Welch, and even Jay pitched in with some coverage, and we're going to talk to Jay in about 15 minutes. Dave, thanks so much.
All right, Steve, enjoy Vegas, buddy.
I appreciate it. Dave Grenig. And your DRF correspondent, as the DRF logo flashes up on one of the giant screens, of which there are, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 screens up here. And, one thing that it occurred to me as I started to put together, potential guest list and so forth for the next couple of days, There's a lot of interesting display, as I mentioned with Keith Shamblin the other morning. There's any number of vendors types, Stats Race Lens. I'm sure we'll talk to Scott Coles, who's used it successfully, obviously, to win the title, 2 years ago, and Scotty McKeever, Scotty Pick Six, with his Equine Edge. I'm looking forward to it. It feels like any shakedown cruise that Scotty was involved to get things going is now, squared away. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Scotty at some point if he's got a couple of minutes. There's also As we wait for Scully, I do want to mention a story that we'll pick up next week when we're back home. And you know that we had discussed the Puerto Rican shipping issue, about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. Shelley Blodgett and everybody that that looks after the horses, Kelly and the team at the Caribbean Thoroughbred Aftercare. And there's a piece that is at Blood Horse. In fact, there's been a couple of pieces that they've done a nice job tracking the story. And part of the story includes a number of racetracks, starting with Eric Hallstrom, just name comes up constantly when we talk about racetracks moving to do the right things. Eric helped get the ball rolling with Indiana coming out against anybody that is involved with shipping horses via freight on ship, and other tracks have now followed suit. There's an extensive piece that needs to be read, because it feels like we're at a kind of a crisis scenario. So we'll get to that next week, and we'll get the women that work tirelessly for the Caribbean racehorses that invariably came off of tracks stateside. So I want to make sure you're aware of that, and I'll send out a link to that story that Eric Mitchell wrote. I think I hear Scully in the background. He's back at Saratoga. He comes in for Travers every year. Missed it last year, but how many Travers for you, James?
31.
How about that? That's a robust number.
It is. My first one, I mean, my family used to come up here when I was a kid, so my first time, I was like 11 when we came up, and we came up for about a decade, come up for the sales and the Travers, and then I started going with friends in the early Thunder Rumble in the early 90s, and
wow.
With friends for years, and now I've been going for Twin Spires for Churchill Downs, so love it up here. I love Saratoga. It's one of my favorite childhood memories, so always glad to be back.
What I met your friend like 3-4 summers ago that you stay with, that's so nice.
Yeah.
And give him a shout out.
Nelson Jackson. Yeah, his son, Mike Jackson's an attorney. I met him when he was in law school at U of L. He went with there with a buddy of mine from Transylvania, and we all decided to come up together. And we just came up every year, made it a yearly trip back then, and now it's become, I'm up here for Twin Spires. I'm doing a handicapping seminar tomorrow morning at 9:30 at the Trackside Grill right next to the track, right next to the paddock entrance, next to the T-shirt stand. I'm going to have Travis Stone, the voice of Churchill Downs. He and I are going to be there at 9:30 doing a little Travers Day handicapping seminar. So if you're at the track, come by and say hello. Love to meet people.
Outstanding. That'll be worth
attending. Bloody Marys. Yeah,
there you go.
There.
Yeah,
it'll be good time.
All right, James, let's dive in and start where you want. And you got about 10 minutes, and give us the opinions.
All right, well, I'll just work my way backwards, then. I mean, I'll start with the Travers. Really be surprised if Essential Quality loses. He's just gonna. One thing about him is he is a grinder. He's got an inside post. Potentially he could get the wrong trip or pace or something like that, but it seems unlikely. The horse I do think has the best chance to beat him is Keep Me in Mind. I just looked at Keep Me in Mind, Steve, where I just thought he came back this year. He didn't get his first race until March. I thought his first, three races were pretty much just, garbage, junk. And it's almost like he, come the middle of May, it was like he's starting over after his two-year-old season. I thought his Preakness was solid. His Ohio Derby was an improvement upon it, getting beat half length. And then it's Jim Dandy's his best race yet. I think that's really a little bit of a sneaky performance. And I expect Keep Me in Mind to turn in a good effort tomorrow.
you know, I brought him up. He's been working really well, and I'm anxious to talk to Welsh at the end of the show. But Dave Greinich really brought up a germane point, which is, you know, what exactly elevates him past essential quality? I mean, that's the key equation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, fair point, 100%. You know, he got that inside trip in the gym, Dandy. Don't know if he'll be able to save that ground. He's just going to have to keep moving forward. But it's one thing, you know, and I've talked about this, you know, sometimes these three-year-olds, they come along in the second half of the season. People always think about like an arrogated as his now. But sometimes they're just no good in the Triple Crown, and then all of a sudden they find their footing. The best recent example of that is Will Take Charge. He just wasn't any good in the spring. But once he got to Saratoga, he just improved by leaps and bounds, I thought. And, you know, perhaps keep me in mind has that same kind of, you know, built in that same kind of mold. We'll find out tomorrow.
Excellent. All right.
All right. So moving back to race number 11, the Sword Dancer. Really an interesting race. You know, definitely I think there's some pace in there to run with Tribe Hooven. The horse I wound up landing on, I mean, you know, I took a hard look at Cross Border and, you know, Japan. Read Kelly Riley has a good international scouting report on his chances. I landed on number 2, Gufo, Steve. You know, it's a little bit of a class test, a little bit of a challenge. But I thought that last race at Belmont was an encouraging race. I thought, you know, he was able to sit a little bit closer. Rosario made the move a little bit sooner on him. And, you know, one issue with him is he's just been too far back at times in these starts. He always comes with it. I think he's eligible to get a better trip tomorrow. And, like I said, it's a very competitive race, but I'm giving number 2, Gufo, an edge for Chris Bassamon in the Sword Dancer.
All right, goes in as the second choice on David's morning line, 3-1, which will be even 2-1, Japan 9-2, but I think that's coming down.
Yeah, I think Japan will get bet down for sure. You know, in the personal ensign, which starts the late pick 4 at Sarasota tomorrow, you know, there's just some pace in there. You know, as time goes by, I blew that start last time with Ramon Hirsch. I just think she's going to come out hard, you know, going to send with Mike Smith. Latrice will be on the front end as well. I'm making my play in this race on number 1, Dunbar Road. And my real rationale for this is that this silly Point Blank got sick. You can just look at her work tab. Chad Brown brought Dunbar Road back to the race this year. She ran in La Toyenne on April 30th. She did not work again for 7 weeks. She obviously caught the virus, got sick. They got her back in the work tab in mid-June. And, you know, I just looked at that should be as a tightener, Steve. There wasn't, you know, there was a really pretty moderate pace in there. It was, you know, sort of a, you know, just a one pace even effort for her, but she really needed it. And what encourages me, it looks like Chad Brown is, you know, she's cranked up her training with a couple 5 furlong moves since that. I just think she really needed that race from a fitness perspective. She ran a huge race in the Alabama when she won that race here 2 years ago. And I just think she's going to get the right kind of trip from that rail, a ground-saving trip. So I'm giving Dunbar Road the edge in the personal instance.
Well, and Flavian Pratt's presence never hurts anything.
Yeah. I mean, she's a big price, too. So that's a long shot play for me. I don't know if she'll be as high as she is on the morning line, but she's going to be decent odds.
She absolutely is going to be, I mean, she has to be no lower than 12-1 at the lowest. I mean, there's just too many, there's too many mojo horses in here, including Bonnie South, who seems to be, you know, the good thing of the moment going into tomorrow.
Absolutely. And I just look at that Delaware handicap where that's potentially a race. I mean, she just didn't fire in there. That race, you know, they went almost 115 for the 6 furlongs, 114 and change. Didn't get the right setup that day. Going to get a better setup, it looks like, on paper. And she's a filly I definitely respect, Bonnie South. Would look to add her to some multi-race tickets.
How about the Jerkins? I'm anxious to hear your thoughts here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, that's a race. I mean, you know, I mean, the Travers, you know, obviously with the storyline, the big favorite. But as far as just a compelling matchup on tomorrow's card, that's it, obviously. I thought that drawing inside for Jackie's Warrior could be a little bit of a tactical disadvantage potentially. Obviously, Jackie's Warrior loves Saratoga, but you know, he is coming off that you know, huge win there. And I'm just going with Life is Good. I know it's a tall task coming back off the shelf for a different trainer, but I just really thought he, you know, I just think it's a 7 furlong distance is going to hit him right between the nose, and I think he's going to get a great outside trip with Mike Smith. So I'll give him the edge in what looks like a 2-horse race. Life is Good.
Interesting. All right.
The Four Go, and I mean, that's like a really tough race, I thought. You know, I'm a little bit against the morning line favorite, Yawson. I know he won his first two straight starts at Saratoga, but I was just a little bit underwhelmed by that Light Diffuse. Once again, he could improve upon that effort. That was his first start off of a freshening. It was a rebound performance. But, you know, he's going to catch some pressure potentially on the front end in here. I landed on number four, Mind Control. I mean, the horse just loved Saratoga. He snapped an 8-race losing streak last time out in that John Nehru, which I thought was, you know, pretty encouraging. And I just think he's, you know, when he gets in form, I think this 5-year-old Mind Control can be very good. And that's why I just think that last race really a little bit of a indicator. You know, he didn't have things easy in there. He had to beat Friends Fire. I thought that was a really good sign that he's poised to run another big race here for Todd Fletcher, Mind Control.
You know, Dave Grenick kind of featured Mind Control in his discussion too, James, and you bring up an interesting element to this for those that haven't necessarily noticed it. You know, the two acquisitions for Fletcher, Life is Good and Following See and Hear, but Graceful Princess in the Personal Ensign, Moretti taking a kind of a swing in the Sword Dancer, Dynamic One in the Travers, and Mind Control here in the Four Go. Fletcher is a real presence, and I haven't even got to the undercard races, races 1 through 6, where he's all over the board with maidens and allowance horses.
Yeah, he's got like the morning line favorite, or at least I think in that turf maiden race. You know, I know he's got the morning line favorite. He's got a contender in the other maiden race on the card, race number 5, that New York Bred race, I think, or race, you know, I know Chad Brown has a favorite race too, so Fletcher's pretty well represented in that race as well. But yeah, that's, I mean, what a great race that is, Steve, that Four Go from a betting perspective. I think it's one of the better betting races of the day. It'll be interesting to see what the tote board is, because, you know, I mean, David Aragona just showed it perfectly with the Mischievous Alex, Whipmore, Lexitonia, Mind Control, Yalpin, and French Fire. I mean, all those horses are going to take money, so that makes for a good betting race.
You taking a swing against Kameen?
I am not. I'm just going to watch that. I just think she has him over the barrel, really. And you know, she really showed an affinity for Saratoga's track last year in the test. That was an awesome performance. I went back and watched that again Thursday or Wednesday night, and I think she's a too tough in there. I also, one thing I think hurts a little bit with Wisconsin is, and even Say, but I mean, I like, you know, I do think Wisconsin has a chance to continue to keep moving forward for the Foley. It's just a pace scenario. It's just not a true speed ball in there. So it looks like the Mean's going to have everything our own way. I thought, Steve.
Anything else?
You know, I did like, you know, in the Boston Spa, you know, Biadera, going to definitely take some beating in there. I'll definitely have her on my ticket. But I thought number 4, New York Girl, was a little bit interesting for Bill Mott in there. She really, you know, her last 3 races have been in a mile. I mean, I think, you know, she might be a little bit more better with a little bit more ground. She had a little bit of a trouble trip last time. Did, like, you know, she finished with some interest in that allowance race at Saratoga. I thought that was a good tune-up. And, I think she's got a chance to perhaps run a good race in there and just sort of get the right trip. So those are two, that's just, anybody's going to beat Biadera. I think I like New York Girl to do it in the Boston Spa.
How about a Friday last second push?
You know it. I think that in Friday they got the mile and an eighth, race number 7, Sweet Indian Stakes. I'm against Make Mischief. I might have tried to beat her at 7 furlongs, but at a mile and an eighth, she's a one-turn horse. I like number 2, Pay Grade. 6-1 on the morning line for Christoph Kamon and Eric Cancel, who had some winners together this meet. Cancel has finished first in races the last 2 days here at Saratoga, so he's riding well. And I just think that Pay Grade missed the break in her long stakes race 2 back. She really turned in a nice allowance win at Belmont last time. The runner-up, if I had a chance, came right back to win by open length here at Saratoga for Falcone. So number 2, Pay Grade at 6-1 on the morning line in race 7 today, Steve.
James, sorry I won't see you, but... We'll talk next week and do some recapping, and we'll also start to look ahead toward Kentucky Downs and more. I appreciate it. Have fun.
All right. Thanks, Steve. You have a great weekend.
Thank you, buddy. James Scully, everybody. James_Scully111. Top of the hour. We're only 5 minutes behind, which is not bad for us. And Jay Pridman is going to join us in a flash here if he's not already waiting in the wings. So Jay next, and Jay pitched in and helped Dave with and Mike Welch with some coverage and did the Sword Dancer advance. But I want to talk to Jay about last weekend just a little bit of recapping. Casey, do you want to take the one break? We're only going to have one break today. Do you want to take it here, and I'll go get a cup of tea, and then we'll have Jay and Hammer and Ed, Andy Serling and Nick Tamaro together giving you talking horses, the Travers talking horses you didn't know you were going to get, and then Mike Welch to close out the Travers Weekend preview presented by Twin Spires. Back after this, let me go get a cup of tea.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents...